Welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. I've been waiting a while to get this interview. She's very sought after, and she's an incredible teacher in the space of relationships and human dynamics. I've been following her work for a while, just impressed with her ability to take complex human things and make them simple to understand. And I think it goes without saying that human relationships seem to be at a crossroads, right? We have this rise of technology. We want more from love than we ever did. And yet we need to build the awareness and the skills to be able to do that, to actually get the outcomes that we desire. And so in this episode, we dive deep into what is going on in modern relationship dynamics. What is the impact of social media in relationships? What about the rise of narcissism? Where does that come from? Where is that going to take us? And the guest today is Teal Swan. Pumped for you to listen. At the very end of the episode, she offers a different and fresh perspective on healing, which I'm excited for you to see. Before we dive into the podcast episode, make sure that you hit the subscribe button, the follow button, wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss any episodes. Not only will that make you, Trace, happy because you get to hear all of them, it'll make me happy as well because it helps support the show. Without further ado, let's go. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today, welcoming long-awaited, finally scheduled in guest, Teal Swan. So excited for you to be here.
Well, it's good to be here too.
So I know you dive into all the subjects of interpersonal relationships, romantic and otherwise, cultural, but also specializing in trauma. And I wanted to start more zooming out. You know, what do you think is currently maybe one of or a collection of the greatest challenges that we're facing collectively, culturally, maybe as a globe even?
I mean, my primary pick would definitely be the fact that human beings are so terrible at relationships. And I feel like when I say things like that, people, they kind of sink into this place where when we use that word relationship, we're thinking about like a primary partnership and who cares because it's just your personal life. Mm-hmm. When I'm using the word relationship, I mean this in a very global sense. We're in a relationship with everything in existence, with the environment that we live in, with our enemies, with, you know, the people we live our lives with coworkers, with the government, right? And we are so terrible at having those relationships. We sink into narcissism. If you want me to tell you, the epidemic of the human species is narcissism. Mm-hmm. It's the inability to include other as a part of the self, and therefore this ability to play zero-sum games, even in situations where it makes absolutely no sense to the self to play those games, because doing so destroys the self. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that if you live on a planet that's orbiting around a sun and you destroy any element of that planet that you live on, you have a negative relationship with it, then your days are numbered. And we are playing a lot of those games right now, a lot of zero-sum games that are bringing us right in the direction of the destruction of our own species. So it's the inability to have relationships that is the epidemic, if you want my honest opinion. At the same time, you've got the fact that, universally speaking, you've got somebody in my profession and with my abilities is looking at a lot of these non-physical influences that are occurring. Mm-hmm. And right now there is a massive turning of the heat up on human awakening. And so the very things which we spent our whole life trying to avoid are the very things we're going to have to choose into in order to pop out on the other side in a more integrated way. So life on Earth for most people is a pressure cooker that is intolerable, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, you've got a storm that's essentially chasing you, and our whole lives we've been trying to get away from the storm and to create adaptations so that we're not in the storm. And what we're being asked to do is the exact opposite of that. But you know, even right now when I'm talking about it, it sounds so trite. It's like, you know, let's say that you were super lonely when you were younger. You're going to have to actually choose into loneliness for the sake of what you're wanting at this point. Mm-hmm. And each and every one of us is in this kind of a pressure cooker in our individual lives. And when everybody goes into a pressure cooker at once, you see all kinds of dysfunctional adaptations to that and all sorts of reactivity. And because we're threatened, we slip into protector personalities. And so there's this angsty charge within the human race right now, which is just making it so it's like, you know, things are popping off at a really intense speed. on top of that, we've got social media where we have so much information that is flooding into our consciousness on a daily basis, and we can't actually process that. Mm-hmm. It's very typical of the human species to develop things which are, let's say, out and beyond our capacity to adapt to them. We can see this with the food system. You know, our ability to develop food has now made it so that we're developing food in a way that is not actually beneficial for the human organism.
Okay, that's ironic. Yeah.
Now, there's all kinds of things like this. And one of those things is this ability to have all information flooding at you at once. The human nervous system cannot process that amount of information. You're not meant to wake up every day and hear about all the bad things that are happening in all the places in the world, things you would never, that would never have come into your consciousness before, and things you can't do anything with. And so there's this collective impression based off of a lot of this of unwellness, of a doom, of terror, really. And yeah, it's a really intense time right now.
Yeah, to summarize all that, we're effed. But on the other side of being effed is, you know, as you said, yeah, that we're in, there's never been more pressure to awaken, never been more, you know, I find it really fascinating what you said, that the, you know, we've developed this technology of, because really the food that is in the grocery stores tends to be more technology now than actual nourishment, but we produce and produce and produce, and then it actually is in a disservice to us. We, same things with medicine, same things with technology. So it's very fascinating. I wonder what part of the human psyche is this over, like, what is that where we like turn everything so processed that we actually lead to our destruction?
It's just not playing things out. It doesn't actually take a genius to sit there and think about the potential ripple effects of whatever it is that we're creating, but nobody spends the time doing that. We're very short-term thinkers.
Yeah, it's so true. And in that short term of like, I could take the pill, lose the weight, I can eat this type of food because I'm hungry right now, but not thinking of the long-term nourishment of everything, including our interpersonal relationships, including the relationship we have with the planet. When you were saying that we like run from this thing our whole lives, and that's actually the thing we have to turn towards. So you talked about loneliness. You then have to, can you speak more to that and maybe what that looks like on a collective level and then to the individual?
Well, on a collective level, it's like whole societies have designed themselves specifically to avoid certain things. Mm-hmm. And they're no longer going to be able to avoid those things. And so they're going to have to directly face those things and feel those things. On a personal level, I think it's more compelling for people. It's much easier to understand. It's just to think back to your childhood. Most people, that's where these patterns begin. So to think back to your childhood, to the thing that caused you the very most pain. Was it that you, you know, was it that you were isolated? Was it that, I don't know, you could not stand the concept of not having a home to belong to, and so you forsake your identity, right? Let's say that you're in a place right now in your adult life where you're in a relationship, but you're kind of in that relationship codependently. You're going to come to a place where you're like, well, I can't really get what I want unless I'm authentic, because unless I step into the space of authenticity, then I can never make the right choices for myself. But doing so always risked the one thing I spent my life trying to avoid, which was a lack of belonging. Mm-hmm. You're actually going to have to consciously choose the risk of not belonging for the sake of getting what it is that you're wanting. I mean, ironically, on the far end of this is that is exactly how you actually do get what you're wanting without actually having to experience, or I should say, without having to live for a long time in the very thing that you're not wanting. Obviously, it doesn't take a genius to see that belonging happens on the other side of authenticity. But it doesn't matter, because in the interim, let's say that you are in a relationship with somebody because of your codependent patterns, which is completely inauthentic to you. Maybe you will lose your home. And each and every one of us has something like that. It's not all the same theme.
Right.
It's all different themes, which is part of what makes this a little bit more complicated to teach to on a global scale. Because, you know, for this person, it's belonging. For this person, it's isolation. Like, you know, for the next person, it's strength. Oh, no. You know, strength was what got me killed. I can't be strong. oh no, you're gonna, you know. So I feel like it's more helpful for us to just kind of like to look at those childhood patterns. And also in our current life right now, a lot of us are finding ourselves in that thing we were trying to run away from, not even by consciously choosing it. We're sort of like, how did I end up in a repeat? Like, I don't understand how, especially those of us that are in the healing field, we spent a long time, you know, trying to get out of those types of patterns. And we're like, how am I here again?
Right.
How is that even possible? I have, my whole life has been designed. So has my healing process been designed so that I never had to experience that again. That was the control I was trying to have. Like there's no more avoidance anymore. So right now, like if I was to sum up what's happening for most of us is that, it's like we're having to learn how to surf, surfing being the metaphor for mastering life, but we're not given the option anymore to learn how to surf on the sidebar.
Yeah, 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 on a nice, easy wave.
No, it's like, okay, some of us are going to die. You're going straight into the rip current.
I do think it's wild what you said about the consumption of social media that, you know, I had someone say to me not long ago that it's a privilege that I don't consume, I don't use social media professionally or personally anymore, unless it's on YouTube or podcasting, which I guess is not a social media, but it is a media. And my psyche is so much better. I was exploring the same thing about the nervous system's capacity for hypervigilance 24 hours a day, because you have this profile that lives online when you're not online. So before, your social risk only existed in social interactions, but now your social risk is actually available 24 hours a day. And that's actually, yep. You know, so I had someone say it's an incredible privilege that I don't use it or that I don't witness the news. I'm like, you didn't know what the hell was going on in the Ukraine, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And now there's, or it was brought to you by the radio. And, you know, it's like all these pieces of information that just keep us scared. Now, granted, I agree with you that this is all creating a very, not the practice wave. We're in like surfing big waves. We're in the North Shore right now.
Yep.
And I feel like COVID just really amplified that. Actually, I think the precipice that I witnessed was the first election in the United States in 2015, 16, whenever that was, that I was like, wow, this is the first time I've ever seen this like level of othering on such a mass scale and done by the party that presents as being for good, for which now is presenting itself as saving democracy. Granted, they've actually eradicated a lot of democracy in the pursuit of that. And so I just find there's like this, it feels like this underlayer of there's so much bullshit and so much misrepresentation and so much like, look over here, this is what truth is. And it's like, you could feel in your body that it's not truth. You could feel in your body that, and I feel like there's so much dissonance now that people are like, oh yeah, this is do the right thing, support the current thing. But their bodies are going, you're so full of shit. You're not authentic. We just fly that flags of virtue all day. And so that compression, which then leads to the addictions and to the overconsumption, is just going to lead to, maybe I'm it sounds like you're thinking it already has, and I think you're right, this like collective psychotic break, but also individual psychotic break.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you think about that? How do we get out of this, Teal? Save us. Save us.
How do we get out of it is the mastery of relationships.
Yeah.
And the mastery of relationships, unfortunately, carries within it the mastery of self.
Mm-hmm.
Like awakening's no longer a luxury.
Yeah, amen to that. That's the privilege, not awakening. Is that the privilege now? What do we have to do to be able to confront that? Like when we hear the word awakening, we, you know, I would say the majority of people think of like a monk on a mountain or Eckhart Tolle, you know, but
no, in fact, it's the exact opposite.
Go in. Yeah. What do you mean?
What I mean is like, obviously, these times of refuge where you know, pull yourself off to a mountain somewhere for, you know, X amount of hours or maybe a few days, that's a tool. That's not the place that we're meant to be living our life.
Right.
If the practice only can happen on the top of a mountain, society is completely screwed. Like, we're right now we're in a place where we have to bring those the type of awareness we would get on a mountain into practice in everyday life. Mm-hmm. It's why very, very few of the people who are really leading, you know, these movements towards awakening are going to be called towards places off the beaten path where they're off the grid and what you would expect. That era is over. It is done. Besides, nobody's going to pilgrimage anymore. They've got 8 million things available to their fingertips at any moment. So we have one option, and that's to bring this information straight to the people and to practice it in the middle of our cities.
Like, what a place to practice it too, right? In the middle of the...
That's so easy. It's amazing.
Yeah. In the middle of our cities, but also, as you said, you know, like right in the epicenter of where the triggers happen, in the middle of our romantic relationships, in the middle of our interpersonal relationships, like confronting the untruth that the family wouldn't confront, like confronting all the parts of ourselves that we've neglected, just, you know, put in a little box. Mm-hmm.
You know that feeling you get when you crawl into a freshly made bed of silky bed sheets? It's probably my favorite feeling in the world. I've been traveling a lot lately, and every time I go to sleep in another bed, I miss my home. I miss my cozy earth sheets. I gotta tell you, these are the best high-quality sheets I've ever had the pleasure of sleeping on. And even my wife, Kylie, will agree, there are no other sheets that compare. They're soft, they're silky, and so comfortable, and you literally just melt into them. The reason they're so soft is that they're made from viscose from bamboo fabrics, which is softer than cotton. And as a huge bonus, it's responsibly and sustainably sourced. On top of that, it's temperature regulating, which means it keeps you cool and comfy all night long. And the unbeatable luxury feel helps turn your bed into the most cozy sanctuary ever. And I'm not the only one who's crazy about them. Cozy Earth has been featured on Oprah's favorite list 7 years in a row. So give their sheets or any of their awesome products a try. They have a 10-year warranty on all their products and a 100-night sleep test to try it for 100 nights. And if you don't love it, you get your money back. But I know you'll love it as much as I do. And they're offering you, my listeners, a massively generous 40% off discount. So go to CozyEarth.com and use Mark at checkout for 40% off all their products. That's CozyEarth.com and use the code Mark for 40% off.
We're going to have to be willing to be very uncomfortable for the sake of seeing the reality and taking action based off of the reality at hand.
So really coming to alignment with what is actually true below the basis. So how do we even begin that journey?
Yes, but this isn't I have to mention that right now in having this conversation, we're flying in the face of yet another rift, which is occurring within the self-growth communities and especially the spiritual communities. Right now, your manifestation communities, which is a big group of the awakening communities, is in direct opposition to those of us that are essentially on this path of waking up to reality and seeing truth. They're like, no. You pull all your attention off of what's happening and you put it squarely on what you want to have be true and don't even take notice of what you don't want it to include in your reality. And so, I mean, there's even this type of a war brewing within the spiritual communities.
Interesting. So in the idea of like bypassing the shadow in even that, is that what you mean by the manifestation?
I'm going to tell you it's bypassing the shadow. I'm going to tell you it's bypassing reality.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you it's an avoidance behavior and therefore it's going to bring about more of what is. They're not going to tell you that. They're going to tell you none of what you're seeing is real. It all happens as a result of thought. All you need to do is project forth thought, put yourself in the space of it already being true, and then it will happen by virtue of inspired action. You know, let's just ignore all the contents of the subconscious mind, which are, by the way, the vast majority of what is manifesting in your life. So, yeah.
So there's that. I agree in that one of the parts that always didn't mesh well with me about things like The Secret was that there wasn't an acknowledgement of people's reality. And I think that's true of a lot of what you're saying about the manifestation community or the way that it's expressed is, you know, if you tell someone, just imagine the dream relationship that you want in your life, but meanwhile, they're in a toxic relationship, they date abusive, unavailable, narcissistic people, they haven't navigated their codependencies. It's like, here we go. We're just going to like think and feel our way to more of a positive light. And so they chase positivity and then they get fucking love bombed, right?
Yep.
It's like such a perfect match.
Yep. Exactly. And so like there's all the, I mean, obviously if you're on the side of awareness versus, you know, it's almost like there's a split actually, now that I'm talking about it, there's a split between people who are dedicated to awareness and people who are dedicated towards just the creation of whatever it is that they're wanting. And it's unfortunate to me that there's such a rift between these two could be perfectly coexisting mentalities, but there's a rift.
In order to manifest on that level where you want to bring what you want into your life, is there a requirement of, like, it's still possible, but there's a requirement of a connection to the reality of your current circumstances?
It's a 1-2 step.
Mm.
It's a, I am seeing what is. I am mining the emotional experience for the truths that are inherent within these emotions. I'm getting to know myself. I'm becoming aware of all of my patterns. I'm consciously changing these patterns.
Mm.
At the same time, a big component within this story that we call life is a person's desires for what they want to have be seen. This is the meat of manifestation. That number two step is, how do I close that gap between here and there? Now, some of that closing of the gap can be putting yourself in the state of having it. That's to emanate a vibrational frequency, which draws things in, but not skipping out on all of this other wealth of information. I mean, this changes your whole action that you would take to get to a certain place, right? It's also all about the why. I mean, so much about self-awareness and therefore what informs what you actually desire is the why do I want this thing? If we were to ask that question, I don't think we'd be trying to manifest the same stuff.
Mm. What do you think?
So often when we look at the why underneath what it is that we're wanting, we're like, wait, what am I even doing? If what I'm wanting is that, going for it that way that I thought it needed to look like doesn't make any sense.
Mm. Yeah, so
it's so avoidant. Right now we can't afford avoidance. And so much of what we're doing in the name of creating a world that we want is so avoidant.
Do you think
you got me on my soapbox? This is kind of like a,
I like it. I like it because I do think about the collective, to bring it back to what you said about narcissism. It's like social media feeds narcissism. If you look even at the developmental stage that a child is like witnessing their parent on a phone, or the child themselves are on a smart device or a phone, they're not witnessing humans interacting and learning empathy. And then now we have these platforms where you build this profile of this perfected self, and you can get every surgical intervention to try to chase that too. And it's like that same is just leading to like the lack of true, authentic interpersonal connection. That, I mean, I think about like, if you're an avoidant person, the healing of course is like to begin to actually move towards connection to what you are most afraid of. Oof. I mean, all the books are written for anxious people to figure out how to actually call avoidant people forward without chasing them anymore. But the avoidant person, I remember when my wife was more, she would be more prone to avoidance. And I remember I gave her the book Attached to read when we first started dating years ago. And she was like, yeah, she started it and then she stopped reading it. And I was like, I just need to point out the irony that when you actually get to the avoidance section, you're going to have more understanding that you're avoiding the avoidance section. And it completely transformed her perception of the impact of her behaviors on other people.
Oh, and let's not talk about algorithms to enhance a narcissistic state. This is actually the thing that's scaring me the most, is that you don't actually get an accurate snapshot, even though you're inundated with information. You don't get an accurate snapshot of the truth of humanity, because you know, these algorithms are basically creating a self-perpetuating concept of reality. You know, I saw this interesting post that was made by a woman who, she saw this video, which was about a man who arrived home late. And when she looked at the comments under this video, all of them were like, oh, you know, that guy's a douche. He's not thinking about you in the relationship. You need to get out of the relationship. All men are like this. It was basically all pro the female. So she, of course, like used this to come up to a guy and was like, look, let me show you. Like all the girls agree, right? Everybody who sees this video agrees that he's basically a douche. And you did the same thing the other day, so you should probably change your behavior. So he goes to the same video on his algorithm feed and looks at the comments underneath it, and they're the exact reverse.
What?
Every one of those comments was, how can a woman expect you to just to be home exactly when you say? Like, why would anybody be in a relationship? Okay, so obviously we're creating this. All of us are actually sort of moving more and more and more into a narcissistic bubble reality built for one. You know, I've long sensed that I'm really desperate for somebody to create a platform where you get to see both sides of an argument. On anything. So like you literally go there, it'd be like a Google where you type in, you know, something like vaccines. And you have all the pro, all the cons, all the, you know, research on both sides, all the arguments to each one of these things. I realize it's overwhelming, but it's like, unless we get this type of a discourse going, you're just going to go down your own rabbit hole and be convinced of your own reality.
Yeah, agreed. It's amazing.
I feel like most people right now who are, you know, at all sort of aware of what's going on are kind of witnessing this.
Yeah.
And stepping back and being like, you know what? We are in like Alice in Wonderland mode where how do you find out what's real anymore?
Yeah.
You know, it feels like you have to become So it feels like you have to become an expert yourself on everything, which nobody can do. You know, you have to be an expert on diet. Otherwise, what are you going to do if this doctor says don't ever eat that food? This one says it's the best food you can eat. You know, you have to become, I get frustrated in my field. You have to become what? A spiritual leader yourself in order to be able to enter the conversation with those of us that say, no, just ignore everything and focus on what you're wanting to have be created. Otherwise you create it in your own reality versus those of us that are like, no. You look directly at what is real. You have to admit to what is real, regardless of how uncomfortable it is. And then based off of that, take actions that are empowered. You know, it's overwhelming. It's like, it doesn't surprise me that most people are just like shutting down and stuffing their face with potato chips.
Yeah. Well, I think when you bring up that point about being able to see both sides, one of the things that I liked and like more, though, although I'm mindful that for everyone it's different, about Twitter is at least I can read a comment thread where usually top experts in those fields are debating or having a conversation or criticizing whatever's being posted. I mean, during COVID, that was a lot of, I used to be in pharma for years. Over 10 years ago, I left, but I was there for 14. And so when I was reading all the data on what was coming out, I was like, this just doesn't make sense. And so I would just look. Previously, when I was in pharma, they would have conversations where they would debate like a pro and against at a table, you know, at a conference. But all of a sudden, the debate was not allowed. And so that was starting to put up red flags. So what you say about vaccines, which I never looked at the childhood vaccine schedule prior. I mean, I have a kid now, but I was going to look at it then. I just had not looked at it. And then when the COVID vaccine stuff came out and I was reading about it, I was like, okay, this doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of gaslighting going on here. There's a lot of not full truths. And so it made me look at the full schedule and look at the totality of the evidence. And I've previously interviewed Kelly Brogan, and when she she worked as a psychiatrist and got ill and then cured herself from her Hashimoto's. And then it made her think about everything she'd been told about medicine. So she went down the rabbit hole. And it was the same for me. I was just like, holy, I feel like the story of cholesterol, same thing, statins. It's like all these, as you said, we have to become an expert in everything and that's impossible. But at the same time, the people that we've like trusted are not trustworthy. And I think that's so destabilizing to the psyche, to the, you know, we were talking about Canada before we hit record. And that I think for Canadians has been, like, I've always been very proud of Canada, and I'm not proud of Canada anymore. I'm not proud of what Canada has become. I'm proud to be a Canadian from birth, but I'm not proud of our country's way of treating human beings and then presenting as being altruistic and good. It's such bullshit. And I feel like that's one of the main viruses of today is that narcissism, that covert narcissism.
Yep. I heard sentiments exactly like what you're sharing echoed my entire time that I was on tour.
Yeah, in Canada.
No matter what city I went to. So
that's that collective opportunity, you know, and I think as Canadians, it's like we've hit, you see this conflict, but in the US, you see this, what I see in the US that's different is that, you know, even if it's politically motivated, I see this like holding to account and this like attack to bring the truth back. And it's hard because it's like hard to trust the person waving this is the truth has been the one who's kind of like co-opted. You know what I mean? So like, how do we be grounded or even find a way to be able to sense the right direction in terms of what we're pursuing, what we're thinking, what we're believing?
I don't have a perfect answer for that yet, if I'm going to be totally honest with you. This is something that I've been thinking about a lot, obviously, because so much of our guidance system is meddled with, is full of shadows, is completely influenced by previous experiences, regardless of whether or not they're a reflection of what is objectively real. I don't have a perfect answer for this. It's something that I'm trying to hone in on, and the minute that I come up with a good enough answer, I'm going to put it out.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I want to build those skills, I want to learn how to create epic love, I want to heal from a breakup, I want to heal my nervous system as I'm in the dating process so I can choose the most aligned partner to create a future with, well, I have the perfect opportunity for you. Because you're listening to the Create the Love podcast, you get to bypass the waiting list for the Create the Love community. You can go to createthelove.com/yes and get started with whichever course is most applicable to your life and the skill set you want to develop. And here's one thing I know for certain, is that great love can't wait. You have to get started right away. Your healing can't wait. So go register now at createthelove.com/yes and get started right away.
What do you think about the interaction then between, you know, how men have been framed as, you know, collectively bad, that testosterone is a toxic hormone, that toxic masculinity, blah, blah, blah. I'm curious how you see those playing out in interpersonal relationships. And then what is the, I'll say, woman's role in that, speaking in that more heteronormative sense?
What's happening right now around gender is upsetting me immensely.
Yeah, me too.
I don't feel like in order for our society to move in the direction of being a much more loving, kind society that is more open-minded, that it's necessary to demonize gender entirely. And by doing so, causing people to push away aspects of themselves that are incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, if we look at masculinity and femininity as two energies, almost like elements within the universe, they both contain within them very important energies. Now, you know, I'm not sitting here debating gender on the basis of what's happening physiologically. I'm looking at it, obviously, being in my profession, from the perspective of seeing it as energies, right? Mm. So you've got these two major, almost like polarities within the universe, both of which have these negative manifestations of the characteristics that fit into those polarities and positive manifestations of those. And I feel like the demonization of either of these things is extremely detrimental to our society, especially in a time period when governments are quite honestly seizing a level of control. They may be saying it, you know, saying that it's democracy, but around the world, I mean, human beings have not gotten over their issue with power.
Mm-hmm.
And power is really about the fear that one can't bring about what one wants. So this dysfunctional relationship that we have with power in general as a species, having gone nowhere, is being capitalized on by governments in a very big way right now, at the same time as we're essentially demonizing men. Masculine energy is what brings a lot of those things which will keep the public safe. Therefore, it's like what I'm watching is this society getting rid of all of the warriors that would keep us safe from the very people who are going to step into power here.
That's super interesting. I think it's from a physiological perspective, it doesn't surprise me that we've been flooded with tons of endocrine disruptors. And, you know, the testosterone rates, I was reading a thing the other day that the testosterone rate of a level of a 20 something year old guy today is the same as a 6-year-old guy, you know, 30 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that you could take a frog that is male and expose it to endocrine disruptors. And I think it's when it's an embryo and it becomes a female. Like, this is not, so much of the response to any of this dialogue is it's transphobic. It has nothing to do with trans. It has to do with like our sperm rates are going down, our fertility rates are going down. There's an attack on the feminine, on
both.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can't, right now we're in a position where you can't win if you're either.
I've been exploring this more deeply, just thinking about how if you disconnect people from the idea of biological sex,
yeah,
then you introduce them to the idea of technology. So if biology is no longer real, then you're more open to transhumanism. What do you think?
Which is where we're headed in general. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're already there. Yeah, that's a whole other topic, man.
Do you think this is like, why we crave farms and village and all that kind of stuff that everyone seems to be sort of drawn towards?
I think we're realizing that the way that we live currently is making us sick, and that there are ways that we used to live which are more conducive to health, and that's what's driving people more towards those things. Mm. Which I honestly think is the way. The way forward is to go back towards tribal-based living without the shadows of tribe. Mm-hmm. That we've seen. I mean, people wouldn't be so apt to graduate away from those things if it wasn't for the fact that there were limitations. There were pains inherent in that type of living. But that doesn't mean you have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is ultimately what happened. So it's going to be about a return to tribe, but this time a conscious tribe that rescues humanity from the brink of this torment, honestly, that everybody's caught in.
There is a clear resistance to the masculine, like to what that energetic that you talked about is what will actually protect the culture. How do people who have been wounded by the masculine and exploited and attacked, you know, all those things by men, right? Because I think that's ultimately what we're like pushing away we're pushing away aggression, but then in pushing away aggression, we're actually pushing away clean anger. That's necessary for protection and transformation. So I'm curious, what is it that we need to do in order to be able to get right in our relationship to those energetics in ourselves and then also to be in relationship with?
Well, first of all, we have to see that anything has these sort of negative and positive manifestations inherent within them. It's like you've got potential energy in masculinity that can express itself as tyranny or as, you know, protection.
Mm.
And so as men, it's like, it's about, well, let's figure out what the sort of exalted form of these different energies that we contain is, and then exhibit those things. For anybody who's been wounded by that, you have to see the positive potential of those things. Mm-hmm. It's just nothing more than falling into this black or white type thinking. And I'm the perfect person to explain this one, having been through the childhood that I, you know, was going through, being somebody who was trafficked, right? Being somebody who was captive. Like, I should be somebody who is a complete man hater, and I can't do that. Why? Because you got to be in reality is to see that, you know, when you've got a potential energy like masculinity, it can either express in this negative way or this positive way. And they're often, you know, one contains the seed of the other. So it's like you have to believe, whether or not men are going to choose this or not, you have to believe in a man's capacity to take that potential energy and to manifest it in this way that's actually beneficial to others.
Mm.
A lot of that is about learning how to connect deeply. And now, you know, men would be like, connection is a feminine trait. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to challenge you on this. Why? Because for men to be in a position where they can take, you know, effective action, they have to be aware. And so what we've been seeing is this disconnection and the lack of awareness of partners or of other people. And that lack of attunement is what makes it so that you take the wrong action, so that you take an action that goes against the best interests of others rather than including others as a part of the self. If you've got masculine energy absent of positive ownership, you have a very dangerous individual on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the manifestation of those negative things does not make someone male. Quite the opposite. And I'm hoping that there's like an uprising of male figures who see this clearly and who are calling other men into the accountability to the positive expression of these traits. Not feminizing men, for example, you know. I'm going to bring my blood pressure down because this one really gets me, like, in a very serious way.
Which part of it?
just watching where humanity is headed. I'm watching self-disownership on a level which is going to be the end of society. You know what I mean? Like the level of pain that is happening in both men and women as a result of everything that has transpired relative to gender. And I'm not just talking about recently. You know, the story of pain relative to gender is thousands of years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this process of moving out of it is not a straight line. Do I see that currently what's happening right now is bringing us out of that? No, I don't. Unfortunately, I feel like it's adding more.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very quick to bring this up too, especially around this trans issue when people are talking about, you know, all of that, you know, multiple gender issues, you know, people who fall outside of the norm of cisgender stuff. A lot of what is happening is against women again.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. I've thought a lot about that too, that like no one's changing men to men with an X. No one is asking, you know, it's a very fascinating, it's like, I look at it and I go, like, where are the adults here? And where are the men protecting the women in these conversations? And I look at things like the sports thing. And I think it's just like, I'm starting to look at it and I'm thinking like, is this male privilege making its way into female spaces? Like, is that an aspect of it?
Well, there's not a really, obviously I was a professional athlete. So like, this is like another one that right there goes my blood pressure again. Yeah, this is not an easy answer, obviously, because you've got individuals who are, you know, slated in a certain direction from birth. I feel like the trans conversation should not even be a conversation when it comes to sports.
Yeah, I agree.
You do have some very complicated things going on, though, with like, you know, the way that people are born. The fact that people are born just in a straightforward way in terms of gender is not an accurate story to tell.
Yeah.
And that's where the real conversation needs to be when it comes to sports, is what do you do with the sort of outliers, which there are a lot of. I mean, like, it's not as straightforward as we like to make it, you know, fitting people into these two boxes, regardless of whether or not I'm having a conversation with you about these, you know, two very sort of dominant polarities, masculine and feminine, within the universe at large. The way that manifests is very complex when it physicalizes.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you've got somebody who's born, say, with both chromosomes, what are you supposed to do? That's a conversation. That's really interesting.
Right.
And that there's no way that anybody has done enough studying on that to be able to tell whether that would give somebody an automatic advantage. Because I'm telling you, if it does, then women's sports are done. That's just the reality. And I know that people hate when I say this. There are definitely some sports where there's more of an even playing field, but I'm telling you, having gone from skiing over to speed skating, it's upsetting. Like, as a female, it's upsetting. You see the difference physiologically between the women and the men, and it's not even a conversation.
No. And the fact that it is said, oh, there's no difference once you get the test, it's like you have to leave reality to participate in it. And that's the thing, is I think for me, the level of sort of psychosis that's become collective is because, one, we don't stand against, we're too afraid to hurt people's feelings.
Yeah.
So we place feelings ahead of facts. And what happens when feelings rule the world? It's no bueno when it's not connected to reality. And I thought the example I always give is like face masks in restaurants. It's like you wore one in, but when you sat down, you took it off to eat. But when you stood up and went to the bathroom, you had to put it on. And this was supposed to make sense. None of it made sense. And so I think the same thing is happening here, is like a biological puberty for a male does give them a tremendous advantage. You have to, when doctors go, there's no difference, I'm like, don't see that doctor. That doctor should not actually be practicing. And because we also have held, and I think this is actually true of, we're kind of in this, a lot of this predicament, because medicine itself has also, we have made them gods. And so because, and I know lots of tremendous doctors, so this isn't speaking to the collective of physicians, but we've made doctors gods. And because we've made doctors gods, when they say something, we don't believe they're capable of being unethical, of being not good. But look, whenever anything is made of God, it has a shadow side. But the other side of that is I was a pharma rep. And yes, there are many, like any profession, like any collection of 100% of humans, where a percentage lack ethics and maybe are even more, I would imagine that there, I would be curious, I don't know it to be true, but that people with more narcissistic traits are more likely to go into certain fields. And
of course.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and medical school makes it that way. I mean, anybody who's gone through medical school will tell you it is so insane and so rigorous that if you maintain super sensitized and connected, like you're not going to make it through.
Right.
So of course we're weeding out empathy. And there's a lot of conversations in the medical field about that.
Well, also they mandated the vaccine for soldiers. They, you know, and also for universities and also for hospitals. And so anyone who was a naysayer who would stand up against these systems is now not in colleges or maybe figured out a system to do it, but they're also not in authority positions of authority. Like government had to get it. So people had to leave the government positions if they weren't vaxxed. And again, I don't care about people's choices. It doesn't matter to me if someone wants to choose to get it. It's just when you make someone have to get it and their job is on the line, that's not informed consent. And anyone goes, I'm like, you're living in another alternative reality. You know, you look at human history and isn't that why we study history? So we don't repeat it. And here we found ourselves like humans. We do back in the same cycle of, you know, all the things.
All of these laws, it seems, are suspended for people when they're scared enough.
Yeah, that's fear, right?
But anybody can capitalize on that to control people. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
What do you think of, because this is something I've been exploring and I'm curious your thoughts on it. What do you think about the presentation that, in my experience, the left is presenting as, we can look at all the shadow sides that are explicit of the right. That's always been called out. There's lots of fucking podcasts on that. But my curiosity is more the shadow side of the presentation of goodness, the presentation of protection, the presentation of that side, which now feels like it feels incredibly exploitive.
It is. It is. And we're starting to live in a backward universe, but it's not the first time in history that the parties have flipped almost.
Yeah.
I mean, there is this whole thing during the COVID controversy and even now of like going right. Right. And I'm definitely not somebody who's going to align with any polarity. Why? Because both have inherent truths. Both see the shadows of the opposite side. I feel like it's very important for us to get rid of this bipartisan mentality that we've got in general when we want to master relationships and instead look at what is the good idea. So standing kind of in the center, not because of wanting to be neutral. I have no problem with an argument. It's about wanting to like not fall into, you know, one side of a polarizing conversation and fall prey to what we don't see just because we like that party or whatever. Bipartisan behavior is very dangerous right now.
Mm.
But it's very interesting because those of us who even are, you know, more on this, in this middle way of approaching the world, have felt ourselves almost standing still and the whole world shifting so that we're standing more right.
Yeah, that's been my experience.
Well, a lot of people, it's been their experience when they've been on this path of awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because of the absolute gaslight. What's happening now with the sort of woke left movement, it's more of a movement right now. What's happening with the woke left movement is this incredible gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got control that is hidden under the veneer of the protection of freedoms. Where you've got a lot of really negative agendas that are being hidden under the veil of, you know, false altruism, where you've got tokenizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really scary. It's radicalized. I mean, it was like for years, everybody was kind of like leaning on the left because they were the least radical party. And now I think they're actually the most radical party.
Agreed.
It's very weird to live at a time like this. But like I said, this flip happened already. I mean, most people don't know this, but in the beginning, when we were around, when everything was around the releasing of slaves and slaves gaining, you know, Black African-Americans getting rights and things like that, it was actually the Republican Party that was pro all of that. That's why one of the first, you know, parties for African-Americans was the Black Elephant Party. So it's not unheard of that, you know, the parties kind of do this all of a sudden with certain issues. And that's what I feel like we're seeing again today.
Yeah, I fully agree. I've sensed that too, that shift that you talk about. I remember seeing a meme where it had like 2018 guy and then and left and right. And then all of a sudden it was like everything, he got pushed, you know, in this meme, the little figurine is pushed to the right, but it's not at all. Like the values and all those things have not shifted. That's been true for me too. It's felt destabilizing psychologically because I'm like, am I crazy?
Oh yeah.
Because then I'm told I'm crazy and then I'm right wing. So then you know, speaking to what you expressed earlier, that dove me deeper into myself because I had to go in to like get to know myself so much more deeply so that I could separate what someone is saying about me versus what I know about me.
I mean, this is destabilizing for everyone.
Yeah.
If you're paying half attention right now, you should just be like,
what the F, right? I think when you allow the chaos to be happening, which it is around you, and find ways that you can stay more grounded in yourself, what are some of the ways that you recommend that we can be with all of this chaos, with all of this, you know, and somehow find refuge and also be part of the change? Because I think that's important.
I think two seemingly juxtaposed practices are very important right now. The first is disidentification. Like when we're in a whirlwind like we are right now, where everything is so confusing, any attachments we really, you know, hold to ourself is preventing us from being in an objective place. So any of those meditation practices or ways of walking about the world that help us to disidentify from ourselves kind of put us more in the seat of consciousness, which is in that more objective, sort of bigger perspective mentality towards what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I feel like the exact opposite practice is very necessary. It's what I'm personally doing much more of right now, which is to immerse yourself in emotions. I actually released a video, I think it was like a couple of months ago, that was called the emotional experiencing process. It's literally introducing a process for dealing with intensity of emotions when it occurs within your being.
Yeah.
And instead of distancing yourself from them, you're literally going completely into them.
Mm.
Like you're immersing, it's a full immersion in the emotional experience and allowing the information that is inherent within emotions to rise to the conscious awareness. And at first, it can be very, very dizzying, but we're developing the capacity by doing so of growing large enough to contain what is occurring. So you actually, it's almost like developing a muscle. You develop this muscle to contain kind of the tidal wave of sensations that are occurring as a result of the reactions we're having to what we're encountering in our day-to-day lives. And the information that is inherent within these emotional states is very important. There's a lot of personal truths inherent within those. It's hard, especially when we're in the heat of things, to figure out, like, what is it that's really bothering me about this right now? What is it that I really think? Like, what is the heart of this issue? And when that rises to the surface, you know exactly how to deal with it. You can no longer, it's not like, oh, I watched that argument, now I just feel all of these emotions. You're like, oh, what the core of what bothered me about this was this. Mm-hmm. And then you can answer to it. So it creates this open door for us to caretake the reality of what is happening within ourselves. And doing that process, when you allow an emotion to move through the being, which is what it needs to do, you end up much more centered. It's almost like, I got a good analogy. Let's say that when you go swimming in a lake, you step in that lake and all of a sudden you've got mud that's just flush to the surface. You can't see anything. Like, you know, it's like that. So you stand still and you're with what is happening. And then what will happen is a settling of that mud until you get that clarity. So the clarity, which is necessary, happens on the other side of that deep immersive experience with the emotions themselves without trying to do anything with them.
Is this one of the tools that we can use also to move closer to healing our trauma?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right now, emotional experiencing is really, 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 really important. Unfortunately, it's really, really, really unpleasant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the thing we're avoiding. It's also the thing that we're placating. You know, we were talking earlier about sort of the way that culture is avoiding emotional reactivity. And so it's like, I've long believed that we have a hard time allowing other people to experience emotions. We don't know the value of ourselves. So, you know, when we're emotionally experiencing, it's like when I've been through a breakup that was completely transformative to my life. And then I was like, when people go through breakups, normally people are like, I'm so sorry that you're going through that. And I'm like, let's fucking go. Like, this is it. Let's go. Because the grief I know is a gateway.
Yeah.
So this, because I know you teach a lot of like healing trauma, of navigating through that. So once we start bringing in things like the emotional experiencing, I know you have a process also that you work people through with trauma. So can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, the process I think you're referring to is the completion process.
Yeah, right? Which, what a great term.
Yeah, the completion process is designed to resolve those traumas that are at the heart of our adult dysfunction. And that is everything. I mean, honestly, if you go down to the root of what's causing a physical ailment, if you go down to the root of what's causing a relationship dysfunction, if you go down to the root of what's preventing your success, it's all traumas.
Yeah.
It's the stress that is unresolved. And when distress is unresolved, we find adaptations to that distress that we feel. And those adaptations may benefit us in the short term, and they absolutely wreck our lives in the long term. So this is a process that is designed to undo that whole process by bringing you back to the root trauma that occurred so that you can create that resolution. And by virtue of creating that resolution, you know what you need to do in order to grow and to heal.
So what does that look like? What does it sound like?
You want me to go through the detail, the process?
Yeah, just like what would be maybe some of the steps? And I know that you have work that's available on this, so we'll make sure we put the links in. But yeah, like what would be...
Okay, so the first thing which really sets this work apart is that you capitalize on triggers. So for the vast majority of history, when people are dealing with distress that's the result of something they have experienced, we call that resurgence of that unresolved trauma a trigger. And what a trigger ultimately is an emotional flashback. The reason that a flashback occurs within the system of a human is to try to draw your attention back to what is unresolved because it needs resolution. The mentality most people have taken across history is to try to get the trigger to go away. Mm-hmm. Well, if we could just calm the triggers down, this person would be able to live a functional life. Well, this is, forgive me, it's insanity. What we really need to do is to help the person to resolve what is unresolved. And it's our general avoidance of powerful, strong, especially painful emotions that's making us not want to go towards that. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we do is go towards it. When somebody has a serious trigger, it's like an open wormhole to that unresolved situation. We then go back and re-experience everything. And the re-experiencing of it reverses the process of dissociation. So the mentality of this healing modality is that dissociation is not a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder. It's, in fact, the cause. It's when you are in distressing circumstance and you choose to disconnect from the experience. Mm-hmm. So reliving, consciously choosing to relive the experience is to consciously reverse the dissociative process. And the choice makes it not re-traumatizing. Why? Because when you introduce choice into a trauma, you can't by definition be re-traumatized by it.
Right.
The introduction just of the frequency of choice changes the entire experience. And the reason why you're going through it, before you didn't want to, there was no good reason to go through it. Now there's a good reason to go through it. It's to mine that experience for all kinds of awareness that was very subconscious, but that now becomes conscious. So the re-experiencing of it is very embodied, and it's also very mental. You know, what did this mean to me when this happened? What decisions did I make? What about this was so painful? You know, And after you do that, this whole experience flips to basically a conscious resolution process, where you're introducing what needs that you had in that circumstance for there to be an improvement around what happened. So that's a whole process in and of itself to distance yourself from what happened, to make things different, to find your empowerment in the situation, and also to understand yourself in a very, very real way. And then you can take all of that information and should take all of that information into your day-to-day life. See, when people start to get worse, when they start to do trauma healing, is when they don't make those types of changes. Let's say that they go back in this childhood experience of theirs and they realize, you know, my emotions were never okay. And let's say that what they find out that they needed was for people in their lives to actually value their emotions, to experience some validation of those emotions, to be able to sit with their emotions long enough to unveil personal truths. It's not an option to come back into your day-to-day life and to be in relationships where emotions don't get to be a part of relationships. It's not a thing anymore. Right. If you stay in those relationships, you're going to suffer even worse. So it's about needing to change those things. So the sort of practical application is choosing to canvas your emotions, choosing relationships where you can canvas emotions, and essentially being in that healing environment of relationship that contains emotional truth.
Mm. What a gift that is, to bring the totality of ourselves, but also invite someone to that too, you know, someone else to, because as you reveal your own self and heal your own traumas, you're no longer a match for the relationships because of course we dance together in our wounds, you know, so it's such a, that's beautiful. If people go through that process, we talked at the very beginning how you said that the healing of the collective is diving deep in healing relationship. Like relationship is the pathway to moving towards that. Would this process be essential in that pathway? Like this type of process?
I'm going to say so.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I think, you know, there's a, to be able to see your triggers as a gift, as a doorway, as a gateway, as information. And then I really love what you said about disassociation, that it's not disassociation that is the post-traumatic. It's actually the act of it that creates it, that's very interesting. And then to go back in through choice is actually what disrupts, because you're in choice. And so, yeah, frequency wise makes sense. Behaviorally makes sense. And, I've never thought of it that way. Thank you for coming on today and sharing with me in this both relational, cultural, ideological conversation, all of those things, and also discussing the path back, which that's been my obsession, is relationship, because to me, it's like the amplification of everything that we need to work on. And so, like, why not turn towards that and liberate ourselves instead of run from it and keep ourselves in prison? And so a pathway of being able to heal that trauma and do it together is, I mean, it's such a gift. And our world needs it now more than ever. So I really appreciate you and the work that you do in the world. And when your videos come, when I was on Instagram, your videos would come through my feed and I'm like, dropping truth bombs in like 90 seconds. Hell yeah. I love that you don't F around. Like you just go right at the center of the conversation and you live exactly what you're saying, which is, it's not about protecting feelings. It's about accessing, you know, liberation. And so I've really appreciated the way that you make your way through the world.
Thank you. We don't really have the time to beat around the bush right now. So.
No, we do not. We do not. I agree with you. Time is of the essence, at least in the way that we are living in time currently. Teal, where can people find more of you and where can they find more about the process and all that kind of stuff?
All my stuff is on my website. So all you got to do is remember my name. Tealswan.com is that website. You can find everything from events to videos to blogs to products, everything, right? But for those people who are going to want to go down the rabbit hole here, I release a new video on YouTube every single Saturday. And that is where to really get involved in the content that I produce and also stay current as to what's happening right now. I mean, the reason that I do these videos every single Saturday is because I want to stay up on what is happening, what needs to be said to humanity. So you'll find that those videos are quite timely for what people are going through in their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, that seems to be, what is it, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. It's like, they're like, how did Teal know? That's what always happens. It's like there's a message in the video, and you're like, I needed to hear this. So I appreciate, again, you, your time, and the way that you show up and live so authentically as a model. So I appreciate you.
Thank you.